Welcome in, Brian Mesorowski and Joe Beamer here on WBEN. Was hoping to be, and maybe we still will throughout the show here, joined by Robert Pondicio, who's the author of How the Other Half Learns, talking about some of the things that go on in the classroom in wake of everything that happened in Lancaster last night and over, of course, the past week. You can read more about that over at WBEN.com. The large turnout at the school board meeting inside the high school auditorium there last night. And if we reach Robert at some point over the next hour, we'll bring him on to kind of talk a little bit about that. But until then, Joe, how's it going? We got to watch out. It was bright and sunny here earlier. It is dark outside right now.
It's scary, Brian. Hearing the thunder through the in the studio, and I did have a moment of panic, and I'm sure a lot of people did this. Aaron Metkowski also had this moment of panic when I brought it up to him. I drove to work with my windows down this morning. I thought it was very nice, very pleasant, and I had a moment of panic when I thought I had not put my windows up. Don't worry, they're up. No water in the car. We're good to go.
That would be a concern now that I think about it. Like, a lot of people would crack the windows
especially
a little bit.
Especially the hour that you and I were driving to work.
So hot, and you might not be expecting the downpour, but there you go.
I was not expecting a downpour. Like, showers, I thought, was the forecast. This is a storm. This is getting inside. There's a storm coming.
Oh, yeah. And you got to watch out for flooding up in Niagara County. That's where they're seeing the biggest hit of the downpour this morning.
But I have to say, this is where I don't understand weather, because there's always a weather event that brings like a cold front or a warm front. This isn't bringing anything. Like, once the storm's over, it's going to be hot just like it was yesterday. Like, there's no relief with the storm. Usually a storm comes in the summer and it brings cooler temperatures. Again, I don't understand anything about meteorology, but I do find that it's going to be the exact same when the storm leaves. So just make sure you are prepared for the high temperatures. Again, as we said, Brian, stay hydrated. Maybe don't drink as many caffeinated beverages. We should probably take the hint. But stay hydrated, because that's you don't want to get lightheaded in this.
Yeah. Well, we'll bring on our guest now. This is my bad, apparently. I sent a link to a meeting that doesn't exist. That's why we...
Well.
Sorry. So I'll take full blame. Robert Pondicio joining us on the line right now. He's the author of How the Other Half Learns, and kind of specifically for our conversation, wrote something in the Free Press just last week. How public schools became ideological boot camps. Robert, thanks for joining us this morning. Now, we're bringing you on for a reason, not just because you wrote this interesting article just a week ago, but here in the Buffalo area in Lancaster, there's been a lot of controversy over a lesson that's come to light. Parents were packing a school board meeting last night to talk about a quiz, a controversial one that goes over a gender theory lesson that was taught in a health class, has a lot of parents wondering what exactly is going on. Basically, the big question they were asking at this meeting last night was, let's not even go into what we think about this. Why weren't we told that this was going to be taught in the first place? And you wrote something last week, totally separate from this issue, that might go into that a little bit.
Yeah, and you caught me off guard a little bit. I'm not familiar with that precise controversy, but the point of the piece that I wrote for the Free Press was a lot of us have misconceptions about how these things happen. And by the way, I say this as a former classroom teacher. I taught fifth grade in New York City for many years. You know, people have this idea that, school boards or states or districts purchase or authorize a curriculum, and that's how it gets taught. What people don't realize is that classroom teachers have an extraordinary amount of liberty to choose materials, to put lessons in front of students without really any oversight whatsoever. And I want to be clear, I'm not suggesting that this is some kind of conspiracy to undermine school districts and schools. It's just the way teachers work, for reasons both good and bad. Your ordinary classroom teacher is given extraordinary latitude to just choose material. So without knowing a single thing about what happened in Lancaster, 99 times out of 100, if there's a big curriculum controversy, it's a teacher just kind of either, you know, getting out over their skis or naively putting something in front of kids that they don't realize is going to be a controversy.
It's what you spell out in this article. Why is that? You know, from your experience as a teacher, it seems like something that would be necessary, right? You think of all the classrooms across one school district, much less an entire region, and all the lessons that are being taught every day. You would kind of need teachers to have a little wiggle room on how they're presenting information and going about and filling out, you know, an 8-hour school day.
The phrase you just used hits the nail on the head. You said teachers should have a little wiggle room. The problem is the culture of teaching gives them a lot of wiggle room. And look, we've all had teachers who, you know, are just terrific. They know how to engage kids. You want to give teachers like that all the latitude in the world. Those are the teachers we remember when we're in the old age home and we talk about. But the point that I'm making is that even the least experienced teacher, so when I was 10 minutes into the classroom, I mean, not literally, but I might as well have been, I remember asking one of my administrators, hey, where's my curriculum? What am I supposed to teach? And she said to me, quote, Mr. Pondicio, you're the best person to know what your students need. And I swear, I thought she was making fun of me. I thought this was like a little hazing ritual. But it illustrates the point that I'm making in this piece, which is that we assume for good reasons that, hey, teachers know their students. They know what's going to engage and interest them. So we want to give them the latitude to choose. But the point is we expect them to choose wisely. We don't expect them to choose controversial materials. We expect them to have a certain amount of discernment and understand, you know, community sensibilities, et cetera. And look, 99 times out of 100, that's exactly what happens. But when cases like this make the news, almost invariably, it's a teacher doing what teachers do. You know, going online, going to a website called like Teachers Pay Teachers or Share My Lessons and downloading something they think is interesting, and then it blows up.
Is this not taking away from, you know, stuff that kids should be learning for maybe standardized tests or maybe state tests?
Yeah, no, look, I mean, I make a joke about this. Like, you know, no bus driver ever wakes up in the morning and says, hey, you know what? I'm going to drive my bus for social justice. I know I've been assigned to, you know, to Buffalo, but I'm going to take this bus to Rochester. Like, we don't do that, but we grant public employees, teachers, this extraordinary latitude that we would not give any other category of public official. And look, at the end of the day, a school teacher, like it or not, is a government employee, is a public official. So they need to be, you know, sensible. They need to be humble in doing things like this. I'm not going to suggest that I know the right answer here. I'm merely saying that these controversies rarely happen the way we think they do.
It has to further complicate matters when, you know, here in Lancaster, it was a gender theory lesson. In your article, you point to some Black Lives Matter lessons. You point to one about Hamas and how they're characterized, this terrorist organization, you know, being painted as a resistance movement in some lessons. Right. And it has to be a little tricky if you're a teacher when, you know, oftentimes a school district or wherever you might be looking to for guidance isn't necessarily giving you the best guidance on this. You know, we have to be sensitive to X, Y, or Z, but they don't necessarily tell you how you should be sensitive to X, Y, and Z or how you should incorporate this into your lesson plan. But what exactly does that mean?
Yeah, no, it's you know, and again, I'm at a disadvantage because I don't know the specific lesson or the source of it. But I mean, I analyze curriculum for a living. That's part of my day job. These kind of controversial issues are almost never part of, you know, published curriculum, like these kind of these curricula that school boards and districts vote on. I think there was a data point in my piece about how literally almost every teacher in America, like 99% of teachers, either, you know, create or customize their lessons. So, you know, the assumption is you treat teachers like professionals. You assume that you're hiring them for their good judgment. But the simple fact of the matter is curriculum just never gets delivered the way we think it does. It's not this idea that, okay, the school board votes on this curriculum on Monday, and on Tuesday, every teacher in the district says, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, and teaches it the way it was written. It just doesn't work that way.
You mentioned in your piece that we're referencing the 1619 project that was authorized by school districts, Buffalo being one of those school districts. Does that mean that the Buffalo schools were saying you have to teach 1619 project, or just authorizing saying it's okay to teach the 1619 project?
Great question, and that's exactly where the rubber meets the road on these controversies, because you and I speak as a classroom teacher, you seldom get those directives. So, for example, when I taught in the South Bronx in New York City, and we were given curriculum resources and whatnot, but was there anything I was mandated to teach? Frankly, the only curriculum I was ever ordered to teach by the city of New York was a 1 week unit on sex education to fifth graders. In other words, I was given a free hand to teach math how I wanted to, teach literacy how I wanted to, reading. But that was the one piece of the curriculum that I was required by the city of New York to teach. Make of that what you will.
What's the solution here? Because a lot of this has to do with not much oversight, no approval needed. Is it as simple as it needs to be approved? That seems like kind of a daunting process, or you'd need to add some administrators. I don't think anybody's clamoring for more administration to be added to any school district anywhere. What's the solution?
There are solutions, but you may not like them. So remember during COVID, one of the reasons that these classroom controversies, we never used to hear about these things, or not the way we did, today. We didn't hear about them 20, 30 years ago. Well, remember during COVID when all the schools went remote, for years I've lamented what I call the black box of the American school. In other words, you really don't know what kids are learning all day. And again, I'm not suggesting that it's always cause for alarm. But you'd have to dig through your child's backpack like an archaeologist looking for clues about what they were learning. Well, then COVID happened, remote school happened, Zoom school, and suddenly the lessons are coming onto the kitchen table every day for a year. And, most people were happy with what they saw. Some people were not happy with what they saw. But it kind of let the genie out of the bottle, right? So, that's why you started to see a lot of states, New York not one of them, but a lot of states passing curriculum transparency laws, where they would ask schools require schools to post the curriculum online. And I've argued ever since, look, that doesn't do what you think it does. Just because you know what the curriculum is doesn't mean you know how the teacher is teaching it or if they're using it at all. So maybe you should require teachers to post their daily lesson plans. Some people would argue, and I'm ambivalent about this, we should have cameras in the classroom. Hey, police officers wear cameras. A lot of other public officials wear cameras. Should teachers have them? As a former teacher myself, I have mixed feelings about that. On the one hand, I feel like I'm doing the people's business. I should be completely transparent. On the other hand, does a teacher want to be on camera, all day, every day? I'm not suggesting any of these are perfect solutions. I'm merely suggesting that the solutions that we tend to think of, let's have curriculum transparency, it's important to know that those may not do what you think they'll do.
What's the right question? So, a lot of it is parental involvement. What's the right question for parents to ask? I'm not at that stage yet. My kid just had my oldest just had a pre-K screening yesterday, and it was hard enough to figure out what went on and, try to ask some questions of it. And I think every parent is probably used to the, hey, what'd you do in school today? Oh, nothing. What's the right question to ask to find out what'd you do in school today?
Yeah, again, without knowing a single thing about what's happening in Lancaster, you described, parents showing up at the school board and I assume, upset and asking questions. Well, look, nobody likes confrontation, but that's an important part of the process. There's no substitute for parental engagement, not just in terms of controversies in the classroom, but just in terms of you get better outcomes for your kids when you're paying attention to what's going on in school. Yeah, we've all had that cliched conversation, what did you do in school today? And the kid says nothing, it's code for parents need to be involved. They need to be engaged. They should, if you're not getting a good answer from the kid, you should have a relationship with your child's teacher. You should push school boards for curriculum transparency that works. I don't want to create an atmosphere of distrust between teachers and parents, but it has to be a working partnership, right? The days of when you just kind of sent your kid off to school and assumed that everybody saw the world the same way and that we're all on the same page Unfortunately, those days are over. So the relationship doesn't need to be kind of antagonistic, but there has to be a relationship, and it has to be, you know, clear-eyed. We are just, it's the rare public school teacher who thinks of themselves as a state actor, so to speak. But it's the rare parent who thinks of it that way as well. You have to realize, look, this is a government service. It's a bedrock government service. It has to be transparent. It has to be effective. And look, in democracy, the only way that works is when we, as parents and citizens, just step up and do our part and demand that transparency and stay engaged.
Well, Robert, really do appreciate the time this morning. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Sorry we had a hiccup upstart.
No, that is my fault completely. I sent a link to a meeting that doesn't exist. The perfect thing for me to do. Robert Pondicio, you can find him at rpondicio on Twitter. Also, robertpondicio.com, which is where you could order his book if you liked what you heard and want to learn a little bit more, How the Other Half Learns. And he joined us talking about a story he wrote last week for the Free Press about a lot of the things that we talked about there. It's one of those things, Joe, that I think it's, if you listen to him talk, it's really a surprise to nobody, right? Like, nothing that he said there is controversial, right?
Right.
Like parental oversight, that teachers have a lot of leeway, that anytime something really controversial or, you know, something like this pops up, that a lot of times it's not like some district mandated thing. It's a lesson that somebody just came up with. Maybe they thought a lot about, and it's, you know, there's an ulterior motive there. Or maybe they didn't think anything about it. But it all comes down to parental oversight.
Right.
It's not controversial at all, which really makes me wonder why we're the only ones talking about Lancaster.
Exactly.
I could not figure that out for the life of me this morning when I saw the reaction to what happened there at their school board meeting, which was really a whole lot of nothing. You heard it here on WBEN. I mean, hundreds packing the school board, and you have that. With all due respect to the lovely Pink, we've got 20 minutes of local news dedicated to the bar and zero on this issue in Lancaster. Did raise an alarm bell in my mind. Nothing about this should be controversial.
No.
To the simple, it comes down to the core issue and what Robert so eloquently put out. That's why he writes books and I read them.
Yes. And I listen to you tell me what the book was about.
Yeah. This is how it goes, the flow of information, is that this is a cornerstone public service, and it should be as transparent as any other public service should be, and have parental involvement that you'd want out of this. And we'll talk much more about it when we come back out of the break. B-Maz and Beamer on WBEN. It is Brian Mazurowski and Joe Beamer on WBEN. Hope everyone's having a good time out there watching out for the rain, because it was coming down here, Joe.
It was. You could hear it on the windows. You could definitely hear the thunder and lightning. I don't know now. Maybe I pressed the wrong button, but all of a sudden I'm getting lightning updates from like three different apps on my phone. Like, lightning's been detected. Yeah, I can see it. I know. I don't need to be told. I saw it.
Yeah, it was pretty big flash out here. 803-0930 if you want to join myself and Joe Beamer here on WBEN. You know, I got a Twitter comment in, someone saying, cause I thought it was strange that, all due respect to the Pink, and, you know, it's obviously really sad what happened yesterday, but kind of odd that we got 20 minutes of coverage on the bar, 0 minutes of coverage on this Lancaster virus. You know, something gets seen millions of times on social media and it's a local story, you'd expect it to pop up just once.
And then the follow-up to it is hundreds of parents showing up upset.
Somebody responding saying, well, maybe no one cares about the Lancaster meeting because the people of Lancaster are always whining, my word, about something involving the school. And, you know, to that I would reply, well, yeah, you know, God forbid that people are invested in what goes on in their local school district. I quite frankly would rather have 100 of even the most annoying people in the world show up to every school board meeting complaining about something than the opposite.
Yeah. To school. I mean, there are school districts where parents don't even show up to parent-teacher conferences.
Yeah. So, I'm okay with that. Like that's that is as healthy as our guest. And if you missed the interview, you can hear it rewind on the Odyssey app on demand over at WBEN.com. If you missed our interview with Robert, I think he laid it out perfectly. Like, look, this isn't the base of this is not a controversial issue. There should be parental involvement in school.
Yes.
In terms of a little bit of oversight, you should feel free to raise your concerns to whatever is being taught in the classroom and kind of raise that awareness because the school is a public service.
Yep.
And it shouldn't be like a secret behind closed doors. It's not proprietary information. It is what we're all paying for and what we're all hoping is really well. And that's just kind of the base of the argument there.
Yeah, and I mean, it's something that Lancaster is definitely going to have to address. And again, I don't want to take away creativity from the teachers. I mean, this is, you know, teachers, you went to more school than I did. You know, this is your job. I think you're allowed to be creative. But, you know, when it's, number one, when it's something controversial like this, I mean, you have to know eventually there's going to be backlash on it. And, you know, again, it's not just one parent. You had hundreds of parents, which is not regular for a school board meeting, to show up and to say, hey, you know, this is not all right. We'd like to talk about this. Lancaster's eventually going to have to come up with something.
Well, it brings me to the other big... Well, maybe they don't, by the way. Like, maybe, you know, we see the result of this and say, like, all right, well, we'll just rethink that and we'll go back to the drawing board and next year we'll see what the reaction is and everybody thinks about this.
Are you saying go ahead with having the teacher put out the same test next year?
No, I'm saying you revisit it based on all the outcry you've had, right?
Yeah.
And whatever you come up with, you see, right? Like, it's a give and take. You don't have to have some great response other than just listening to the people who voice their concerns.
I do find it hard to believe that someone would put this test out and not think that it would be a little controversial. Like, again, I realize that most people are in their echo chambers and, hey, what
that's the reason why.
I only follow people that are like me, but I just can't imagine you're in a school building all day. Do you not talk with other teachers? Have you never talked with parents? Like, I cannot believe that you would put this out not thinking it's controversial.
The other controversial topic in schools might be coming to a head today.
If you have kids in grade school, you know it's the great parent debate on if and when a child should get a phone. Plenty of kids have them, even in lower grades, and they're looking at them all of the time. Today, LAUSD, which serves about 500,000 students, will decide on a possible ban on cell phones during the school day to keep kids more engaged, help their mental health, and prevent bullying. The board will take a vote that would ban their use even during recess and lunch. Alex Stone, ABC News, Los Angeles.
It is this might be the issue for parents today and for kids between what, the ages of 10 and 18?
Yeah.
Today and probably going into the future, unless something drastic changes in the social media picture.
This discussion will never go away. Phones are not going to be... In 20 years, cell phones aren't going to be landlines. You know what I mean? Like, this will always be a debate. And I don't think
I wonder about that, though.
I don't think there will ever be a given answer or a general agreed upon answer of when to give a kid a phone.
Oh, that will always be a debate.
Yes.
But the in-school part of this, I think we're kind of reaching a point here. And a couple, you were gone, I think, for the week or the day when I talked with the lead researcher on the book, The Anxious Generation, which is really the book that has thrown a lot of this conversation into the forefront. And we talked about this very issue, phones in schools. Now, the book in general is kind of about phones with kids in general and how they don't believe that anybody should be on social media. But a big aspect of that is, at the very least, phones should not be in the classroom. They shouldn't be allowed in schools. And they said a phone-free classroom, by the way, is not, all right, don't use your phone while class is going on, and then everyone's in the hallway on their phone again.
Right.
It is, there are no phones allowed
at any time in this building.
Between the opening and the closing bell,
yeah.
You can't use them.
Yeah, I don't see anything wrong with that.
That is what they argue for, and that's what they're talking about in L.A. County. That's the nation's second largest school district. And they could vote on some. And now I don't know if it goes that far. I don't know if it's a total ban, if it's a classroom ban, like what exactly they're talking about. But we were talking about this with Mike Dubusky. Between this, what they're doing in New York that we've been talking about the past couple of weeks with age restrictions on social media,
yep.
Which is not a total, you know, hey, if you're under 18, you can't be on it. Hey, if you're under 18, we'll make it a little bit different, right? It's not as tough as a lot of people would like to see it. It's in the midpoint, and it shows like, okay, we're kind of doing something about this a little bit. You just kind of see this more and more, and I wonder if we're reaching a tipping point, Joe, where you're right, the discussion is always going to be, you know, when is the time for a smartphone for your school? I don't think that's going away, at least in our parenting lifetime, let's put it that. But I think the discussion of should phones be allowed in schools, in middle schools and high schools specifically, I wonder if we're going to move quickly toward the consensus of like, yeah, enough's enough.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not necessary. You know, I mean, in the 90s, the discussion was, should you be able to bring your Game Boy to play at lunch and recess, right? And that was quickly shot down. Like, you didn't see kids walking around. I think this is pretty easy. Like, you're in school to learn. And part of school, I've always said this, there's the book part of school. There's also the learning life part of school, the learning how to socialize, talk with one another, build friendships, build relationships. You don't do that when your face is buried in a phone. Like, I think this is a pretty easy answer, and I'm hoping LA sets the standard and we see this start spreading.
There's the mental health part of this that was laid out by the Surgeon General yesterday, who says that they need to have some sort of warning label on social media. I mean, which to me is, like, I agree with in principle. The idea of a warning label on social media, though, is laughable.
Yeah,
like a warning label on. So, do you buy social media from behind the counter at Sunoco? No,
which is just a pop up when you log in.
Yeah, I don't know like why that. But he says like the argument is sound. I think the solution he comes to is, you know, teens who spend more than 3 hours a day on social media double the risk of anxiety and depression. Average time for that age group is nearly 5 hours, by the way. So over almost double what that number is. So they say, well, put a warning label on it. Well, I say, why don't you just ban it? You would have constitutionalists who would say, no, because that's a big free speech violation, and I'm sensitive to that a little bit. But I think parents could look at that easily and say, in your house, no, it's not going to happen. The school argument, though, it's a little bit different than that. And I think it's at a more basic level that more people can get behind. It's not necessarily looking at all of these studies coming out about depression and anxiety and the, you know, impact it has of, you know, getting the, all of them talk about the dopamine hit your brain gets from looking at the phone. You have to get more, and, you know, it becomes addictive in a way to scroll through your phone, and you don't have to be a teenager to be listening to this and nodding your head right now, right? I mean, I know people in every age bracket who this would fall under. I think it is as simple as, I don't know if you've seen this, Joe, but I've seen a lot of posts of teachers and people in classrooms who have done like the little experiment where it's, you know, they have all their students mark down the amount of pings their phone has during, you know, one 45-minute class. Wow. And then they show the chalkboard at the end of a 45, and kids will have, you know, in that 45-minute class of 25 kids, there's been 90 text messages going back and forth, like all the Snapchats, the Instagram notifications, other apps, like it's just ding, ding, ding. And it's always in the back of your mind. Like, think, you don't have to be a kid in class. Like, just think about it. Your phone buzzes.
Yes.
For at least the next, you might be the type of person who can completely forget about it. But in the moment your phone buzzes, and then for what, at least 10 seconds after, you're thinking about, was that, okay, text? I wonder who that was from.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's 10 minutes. You're just totally not paying attention to whatever's going on. Your mind is taken elsewhere.
No, and as kids who, as you and I, we all went to school, I didn't have a cell phone when I was in school. And guess what? There were still things distracting me. So you're adding that to what already is distracting the kids on a regular school day.
And then you wonder why, like, oh, what'd you do in school? I don't know.
Yeah, no idea. I was thinking about that text.
I was thinking about that. And it's not just one going off, right? It's like boom, boom, boom. You get five of those in a class, it would totally throw
your
concentration,
yep.
Even if you're not looking at it.
Yeah.
And a lot of these kids are looking at it.
Just the thought of what was that on my phone. That's why, like, when this show starts, I put on Do Not Disturb. I don't want anything coming through my phone.
Lighting up or anything like that?
Nothing. Do not disturb. It doesn't hit my watch. It doesn't
hit
my phone.
See, if I did that, we wouldn't have had our guest on the first segment.
No, yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, if I'm waiting for something, I can't adjust it. But 9 o'clock, my phone goes into Do Not Disturb.
But that is, like, that is the thinking behind the banning phones in school. And I don't know why this would be controversial. I just see it as such an obvious thing that has to go on. And if you're a parent and you say, well, I need to be in contact with whoever it is, I mean, do you really all the time?
Right.
If there's a certain day, you can tell the front office, like, hey, you know, he might be getting a phone call from me.
Yeah, exactly.
Because we might need to, whatever the reason might be.
There's something going on in the... Just like we did for years before this. Hey, there might be something going on in the family. I might need to contact him. Just to let you know, I'll give you a call and you can get me in contact with him. Every classroom has a phone, and that's still a thing. I was in a school recently. They all have phones in the classroom still. So you do not need your cell phone.
And by the way, how seamlessly did that work, by the way?
Right, yes.
Right, oh, got a call. Hey, Jimmy. All right, you go. And then class goes on.
Yeah.
Now what's that like? You know, Jimmy gets a call on his cell phone. He takes it during class. Everyone's looking at him like, what's going on? Why are you answering the phone during class? Hey, it gives the phone to the teacher. You know, oh, go, you know, and then it becomes this whole thing.
Even before the phone was in the classroom, you had the overhead speaker. Mr. Joe Beamer,
yes,
you have a call in the principal's office.
Yeah, you don't even need the, what am I talking about? Yeah. You don't even need to ring the... classroom.
It's just, to me, it's obvious. It's not like kids are getting smarter. They're getting smarter on how to sneak their phone, but they're not getting smarter in the stuff they're trying to, you're to be in school for. Again, it's 6 hours. As the Beach Boys said, you got 6 hours of school, then you can go home and turn the radio up all the way. But you're there to learn. And I like I said, I hope this goes school to school. And you know what, Brian? It's funny because before we started talking about this, I didn't realize how many school-age kids had phones. I mean, I'm still thinking back in the terms of, you know, my last year in high school, 2007. I didn't realize that it's a good percentage of kids that have not just a phone, a smartphone, and it's in their pocket all day, every day in school. I don't think that's the place for it. Leave it at home. Leave your smartwatch at home. And guess what? You can catch up like we all did at 3:30.
I didn't even think about the watch.
Yeah, that too.
Mostly because mine hasn't worked in like 3 years.
Yeah, but I mean...
I don't get any messages on it.
If these kids have smartphones, you know, a lot of them have a watch too, and they probably have a plan on their watch. And, oh yeah, I'll leave my phone at home, but you got everything right there. Go to school. And this is coming from someone, Brian, who didn't do too well in school. Okay? It's not like I'm talking as the smartest kid.
Take it from me, kids.
Yeah. Go to school to learn. I mean, again, you're there for two reasons, and teachers won't like me saying this, but you're there to learn, and you are there to socialize. Like, we are there to have face-to-face conversations.
Mm-hmm.
Learn how to talk to somebody verbally, right? That's what school is about. Again, you know what? When I was a kid, 3:30, I'd go home, beep, 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 and I'd check up on everything.
What was that?
That was AOL.
The fax machine that you're...
yeah, that was me faxing my friends. Hey, you want to hang out?
You checked your faxes. Just to make sure no important business came through
That's
during
right.
the day.
You know me, I was all business when I was back in high school. No, but I mean, you're there with... You know, it should be. You're there with a lot of your friends. You go to the same school. You should be socializing with them. And you know what? You got to send a text during class. Do what we did. Pass a note. And try not to get caught.
The old-fashioned way. I still can't believe of how many people, because, you know, and parents, too, will put on phones that they give to their kids, like a track, like the Find My Phone or something, like tracking, so that your parents can see where you are all the time. And sometimes even, like, see what you would do on the phone all the time. There's just no way you could ever sign, like, if the... option was, you put me in the shoes of a 16, 17-year-old again, and I was told, hey, you can have a phone, but I'm going to know where you are all the time because I'm tracking it.
Yeah, no thanks.
I would just say no to the phone, and I wouldn't think twice about it, but now it's like the exact opposite thinking, which is just crazy to me.
You know, as someone who I tweet a lot, I don't do much Facebook anymore, Brian, but I like to use Twitter mostly for sports stuff. But I could easily, if someone said, hey, Joe, no social media, no phone for a week, I'd be fine. Like, I would find a way. Like, I would find a way to survive. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I would, oh my gosh, I have to actually talk to someone.
You'd actually like it.
Yeah.
You might be bored. And I don't, like, I have no problem being bored. Being bored is fine.
No, being bored is how you learn to be creative.
Yeah, or, you know, you figure out you're not creative. And you just...
that too. The only thing without that I can think of in a day-to-day, and this is, I'm not making a joke, I'm serious here. The only thing is, what am I going to do when I'm pooping? That's the only thing.
And Joe, how do we top that for the rest of the show?
I think this person keeps texting to throw me off track because they know it will work, but... I might have to break the fast food streak tonight, Brian, and have McDonald's because ever since Grimace threw out the first pitch, the New York Mets have not lost. They are one game out of the playoffs, and I might have to just pay my respects to McDonald's by getting a Big Mac.
That's what you're going for?
Yeah.
Grimace, the purple thing, threw out the first pitch of the game?
Last Wednesday.
He had like very short arms.
It wasn't a great throw.
Okay.
But he threw it, and they haven't lost since. And they beat the defending World Series champions last night, 14-2.
Yeah, but there's a lot of games.
Yeah, I know. You don't want to take one game. But they swept the Padres.
Summer hasn't even began.
I know, but as I said, last year they only won six games in June, and it eliminated them. They were out of the playoffs before July, so you can lose it in June.
Yeah, it's like the Sabres. Yeah. Right? It's, you know, you can be out of it pretty early.
When's the last time they won a game in June?
Oh, I thought you were going to say... When's the last time they won? They have not played in over 2 months.
It's crazy.
This hockey game tonight.
Yeah.
Like, that's the part that kills me about this whole thing. Like, hockey goes on for 2 months longer than what we're used to.
Yeah.
Just give me, like, 2 weeks of that. Chip into it a little bit.
Just a taste of playoff hockey in Buffalo. Oh,
you see how, like, crazy all those people were in Edmonton over the weekend?
Yeah.
Just going, they had a 50-50. A 50-50. Did you see the number on the 50-50? Now, this was over several days. I think it lasted. People could buy tickets from like the start of the finals online and through game three, and they had a winner in game four. The 50-50, the pot was $15 million.
Oh my gosh. For a team's 50-50.
Someone walked away with like $7 million.
And they won.
Can you imagine that?
No, I couldn't.
It's insane.
But you're—I mean, how crazy those Edmonton fans went over just not getting swept.
Yeah,
I would share the passion.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll be back here tomorrow on the hottest day.
Oh, can't wait.
Hottest day.
Flip flops at work. Acceptable. Tomorrow
might be a short stay, but I'm second guessing it because in here you get a little chilly.
When you first walk in, I'm hot now.
You are?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm there. We'll have to think about this. Madison Beamer. We'll be back here tomorrow on WBEN.